The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hart Franklin from ISO on Movies, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your favorite film buff, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 179. Now, obviously, you've read the description of this episode, and you know that I'm going to be joined by local film critic, Paul Markoff. Paul is also the co-host of the Filmbound podcast, which you can find at filmboundpod.com. And I'm always glad to have Paul come back on the PVD Cast, as he does twice a year, to talk about the films that we have recently seen. In this instance, we're going to be talking about films that came out between August of 2018 and December of 2018. And as I always mention, we try not to ruin any of these films for you. But, you know, I'm going to be honest, spoiler alert could be in full effect. So if you hear us talking about a film and you haven't seen it, you really, really want to see it, maybe you just kind of glance over that little description. You know, I don't think that that has happened yet. This is the eighth time that Paul has appeared on the PVD Cast, and I don't think I've ever received any comments from anybody saying, hey man, you ruined that film for us. But I still just like to throw it out there that spoilers may exist. You know, it's kind of hard for us to keep tabs while we're in the heat of the moment, so to speak, talking and giving our opinions, our insights on these movies. But just there you go. To cover my own self, I want to say, you know, there could be some spoilers. I would also like to say, please don't send me hate mail because of the overuse of the adjective fantastic. when you're recording a podcast, you don't realize all the weird things that you do. And then when you go back and edit the podcast, you realize, man, I used fantastic like six times in this hour-long episode. So I apologize for that. I will try not to have that happen again. But if you feel like you want to rant and rave to me about it, well, there's a couple different ways you can get a hold of me, and now will be a great time to tell you about that. Of course, I'm on Twitter, at PVDMVP. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com, or you can leave me a message over on the Facebook page, that, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. But what can I say? It's going to be a fantastic episode. Oh, God. Anyways, let me tell you about today's sponsor, and today's sponsor of this podcast is, of course, Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. I already mentioned they have 180,000 titles to choose from, so you know they have tons, a metric ton of books, especially on movies and films. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back with Paul Markoff as we're going to talk about a whole lot of movies. All right, Paul, welcome back to the PVD Cast again.
Thanks again for the invite.
You're quite welcome, man. You're quite welcome. It's always fun to sit down and chat about movies, and we're going to be, as I mentioned in the intro, talking about the movies that came out, say, August, because that was the last time we talked, through the end of the year. There's been some big blockbusters. There's been some great documentaries. There's been a whole host of fantastic films to talk about, so I'm glad you can make it, man.
Yeah, I'm glad we could do this again.
Before we get too far along, you want to talk about Filmbound real quick, the podcast that you're the co-host of?
Yeah, I co-host Filmbound at filmboundpod.com with Mark Pfeiffer, who is my co-host, co-producer. We used to do the long-running small town film review program now playing.
A staple at Otterbein University.
A staple, yes, of Otterbein and Westerville. That was no longer as of 2017, so we started the podcast to fill our film void.
And how's it going?
Well, we shoot about anywhere from 2 to 4 podcasts at a time, and then we roll them out 1 week at a time.
Oh, that's cool.
Each episode, we'll either discuss 1 or 2 movies. If we just discuss one, the second segment is either a recommendation from one of us or kind of a hot topic in the film industry that we think, you know, would be interesting to discuss.
Cool. And most importantly, you guys enjoy doing it, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the best part about podcasting, is just having fun doing it, you know, because it can be a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun as well.
Yes, yeah. It's probably maybe a little less work than the movie show, but to a certain extent, it feels maybe a little more rewarding because there are no limits to a podcast.
True.
I mean, as far as you know, what you can say and how long it can go, where, you know, with television being on WOCC, you're under the confines of 30 minutes and, you know, you have to mix in a couple of breaks and you can't discuss in length the topics and the themes and everything that you want to in a film. We can give all we got on the podcast.
There you go. All right. Well, I'll let you go ahead and get started. What film would you like to talk about first here from the last half of 2018?
The last half of 2018, you start getting into Oscar season.
Sure.
You get the, and I'm putting air quotes, the prestige pictures. But there are, you know, some of the better films do come out later in the year. One my wife and I just watched on Screener the other night was If Beale Street Could Talk. It's from writer-director Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight, and it was terrific.
Is that Regina King that stars in that, I believe?
Well, she's a supporting
actress. Supporting actress,
yeah,
okay.
It's centered around a African-American couple growing up in the, early to mid-70s, and it deals with the racial issues of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's told in flashback, so you see that he's been incarcerated for a crime that he didn't commit. And he finds out while he's in jail that he and his girlfriend at the time are going to become parents.
Oh, okay.
So it's this, you know, struggle with, you know, she's going through the typical things that women go through when they get pregnant. And she's also trying to, and her family is trying to, clear his name of a crime he didn't commit.
Okay. All right. So you highly recommend it?
Yeah. It's definitely one of the best.
It's worth all the buzz that it's getting?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It's one of the best films of last year. I think I like the lighter moments better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really kind of captures the essence of the moment, whether it's, and I think the score was up for a Golden Globe. I hope it's up for an Oscar.
And that's where Regina King, I think, was up for a Golden Globe. That's why the name clicked in my head.
Yeah, and she won. She won the Golden Globe.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And she's really good in it.
All right. But she has a more supporting role than the actual starring role.
Yes, she plays the mother of the young woman that's pregnant.
Okay. I'm going to go with, since you talked about the last one that you watched, I'm going to talk about the last one that I saw, which I went to the theaters to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Did you happen to catch this?
I did. I took my 8-year-old daughter to see it, and we both really enjoyed it.
Oh, it was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, just to me, the most amazing part of it was the blending of all the different art styles. Like, and it seemed so subtle that you didn't realize it until, you know what I mean, until a few seconds later you're like, oh well, darn it, what do you know, that's totally different than, you know, like, it's just the way that they kind of just seamlessly blended it, because I think it could have lent itself to, we're going to change times so we'll change the art, but it wasn't that way. It just seemed to be like a constant mosaic of just changing that style of art, and I really appreciated that.
It's rare that I say this, because most of the time you're watching a movie like that and you're like, oh, this seems really pretentious.
Right.
But it's really artful without being overly pretentious.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, as you
Thank
say,
you for just, saying it much better than I just did.
It just kind of, blends well together. And I think a lot of that is just the different Spider-Man characters kind of lend themselves to creating a different essence of who they are and the times that they operated in.
Correct, yeah. So I really liked it. I thought the story was pretty interesting as well. I liked it overall. I gave it an A because I just thought it was absolutely fantastic.
And we don't do grades anymore on the podcast, but I would give it. I would give it a B. I mean, I still in my head have have grades that float around in there. And yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I was surprised that my daughter enjoyed it as much as she did.
I was just going to ask if she enjoyed it.
Yeah, she did. And it's funny. The following week, I went and saw another movie that I thought she would enjoy much more, but Mary Poppins Returns, and she likes. She definitely likes Spider-Man
really?
Better than Mary Poppins.
Really? Why did she not like Mary Poppins?
I think she said she was bored with it.
Really?
Yes.
What was your take on it?
I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
It wasn't nearly as good as the original, and it wasn't even as good as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. but I think part of the reason I think Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse works so well is, and my daughter doesn't have attention deficit disorder, but I mean, that thing's, it's constantly in movement.
Right.
I mean,
there's
no slowing down, this Spider-Man. Mm-hmm.
What did your daughter have any previous knowledge of Spider-Man, or just kind of he's Peter Parker, he's bit by a spider, blah 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 blah?
That's probably about it. I think she watched maybe the first half when we watched Spider-Man Homecoming on DVD.
Okay,
but yeah, that's all she knew of Spider-Man. Okay. So I actually thought, and apparently didn't bother her. I don't know how much she actually followed of what was going on, plot wise, because I mean it's fairly complicated.
It definitely is. Because you have all those characters and their particular backstories which I thought was well done. I mean, those backstories were quick and to the point. Boom, 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 boom. Here's what you need to know. And I thought that was great. So,
Doesn't get bogged down. I think what they could have, it could have, diverted off on a tangent into another story. And,
correct.
There are essentially two main Spider-Men.
Yes.
And then you have, a collection of maybe a handful of other ones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That I think they do service to, like you said, in giving the background that you need.
Right.
But not getting bogged down and, overly plotting the story.
Correct. Yeah, correct. So, Mary Poppins.
B minus. It's a B minus. It's a B minus. It's a pass, I think, more or less because the things that maybe seemed... innovative at the time in the original Mary Poppins. You watch them now and you're like, I mean, it's kind of cool that they came up with the idea, but it doesn't look as effective.
Yeah, right.
I mean, here the special effects are really terrific and, they take full advantage of the story and how they jump into various entanglements.
Okay. Go ahead. What's another movie that you would like to talk about, Paul?
I'm trying to pick
some. I'm going to let the listeners know that we have not looked at each other's lists nor talked about this prior to recording. So... much like we do every single time.
I didn't get a chance to watch too many foreign language films last year. This one is kind of, I guess, moving in the forefront. A friend of mine that kind of tracks the, for lack of a better term, spreads.
Okay.
The Vegas spreads on the Oscars after the Golden Globes. This is pushed to the top of the Vegas spreads.
Okay, what
for
is
it? Picture. It's Roma.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's a foreign language film directed by Alfonso Cuarón.
Uh-huh.
It actually opened in theaters and Netflix. I was lucky enough to get out to the Gateway Film Center. I don't know how many... I'm not sure if the Gateway at the time was the only one that was playing it, but I knew based on what I had seen in the previews that I wanted to see this on the big screen. It's shot in black and white. It's set during, I want to say, late 60s maybe? Yeah. Sometime in the 60s in Mexico. And it focuses on a family who is having some struggles on their own, but it focuses more on... I don't know if she's... I'll just call her a housekeeper because I don't know what her official title was. But she's kind of the central figure of it. And it's basically just following what she goes through with the families during this kind of turbulent time south of the border.
Okay. All right. You give it what grade?
Yeah, B+, A-.
B+, A-. Okay.
It's terrific.
You know what? I'm going to see that, you've kept with this idea of period pieces, so to speak, with your first two. So I'm going to meet you on that one. First Man. With Ryan Gosling playing the role of Neil Armstrong. Did you happen to catch that one?
I did. I thought it was pretty good.
I really liked it. Here's why I really liked it. I felt, especially for those that haven't seen it yet, the first 10 minutes is just nerve-wracking. It's a nerve-wracking opening scene. One that had me almost to the point of being anxious myself of, oh God, what's happening here? So I enjoyed that. I thought the performances were really good, especially from Ryan Gosling. And I walked away from that movie going, good God, we killed a lot of people to get to the moon. And I mean that seriously.
Yes.
Because as a kid, I don't remember hearing about that stuff.
Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. It was very, like, sanitized for me. And to see in that film, albeit maybe some of it was a little bit dramatized, but still to see all those people, five people in that movie died trying to get to the moon, and Neil almost died like three times in the movie on his own, it was very eye-opening to go, holy cow.
Yes, no, I'm right there with you. And I think to a certain extent, it didn't benefit. I mean, and they deal with this in the picture, sure, that the U.S. government wasn't going to, and at that time they could control, they could really control, you know, what information was being dispersed. Mm-hmm. You know, they had limited, we had limited right. means of finding out this information.
Right. Right.
But, and they go into great in depth in First Man with essentially the war on space between the United mm-hmm. States and the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to a certain extent, that information was kept. Not only from the American public, but also because you wanted to keep it from
Russia. Yeah.
Russia, because yeah. that, I mean, if that information had gotten out, I don't know that we would have.
Yeah.
You know, oh, put yeah. a man on the moon.
You could have spun that. I mean, our Soviets could have spun that to a particular point in which maybe the citizens of the United States go, no, we're not doing this, you know, which you get a little glimpse of that in the film. I also like the fact that they kind of showed the effect it was having on Neil Armstrong himself. You know, I yeah. think that, you know, like, I think that's something I didn't think about either, is like, you know, those guys probably have, for lack of a better term, some type of PTSD from what they've experienced. Yes, they experienced some amazing things, you know, being out in space, but at what cost? At what cost?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was extremely, extremely effective in showing kind yeah. of the meticulous way that you go about the process.
Yes, yes.
You know, and, you know, as you indicated, you know, that it was not a walk in the park. I mean, it was a grind, and what a, you know, some people sacrifice their lives.
Right.
I mean, you could argue, not necessarily that maybe Armstrong sacrificed his life, but he sacrificed things, you know, there were a lot of stress that was put mm-hmm. on himself and his marriage and mm-hmm. his children, you know, that, yeah. you know, that he gave up.
Yep. I gave it an A. I really, really liked it. I thought it was really well done.
I still think, to a certain extent, a film about Neil Armstrong, and I understand, I knew a little bit more about this film and its subjects mm-hmm. than I do a lot of other films. I try not to do much research, but I think I fell across this, that Armstrong was a very restricted guy. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he wasn't out there. He wasn't, although he was a public figure, because obviously right, he was part yeah, of the space
yeah,
program.
Yeah.
People didn't know much about him.
Right. He wasn't Buzz Aldrin, who was quite a character.
Right, right. You know? So I think to a certain extent, we're kept within arm's reach of Neil Armstrong in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be what separates it for me from being a great film.
Okay.
I never felt like, to a certain extent, I really knew. I knew what Neil Armstrong went through. I knew mm-hmm. the process, but I don't know that I really knew or felt what Neil Armstrong went through.
Well, I'm going to talk about another film that has a little bit of a throwback feel to it. I believe it came out in August or early September. Black Klansman, which is Spike Lee's film from this year, starring, of course, Adam Driver. And I can't remember, Washington's his last name, but I can't
remember. Yeah, it's Denzel's son.
Denzel yeah, Washington's I can't son. Remember his first name. I apologize for that. But while I was excited for this, I gave it a B-. I think that... Did you happen to catch it?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I enjoyed it. I'm probably closer to B, but...
The ending was just so awful. Like, you had literally three endings. You couldn't come up with one, just one ending, and not try to shoehorn in your particular social commentary. Because in my mind, I'm sorry, the whole film was your social commentary. It was 2 hours of your social commentary. There's no need to shoehorn in more.
Yeah, I understand what he was trying to do, but yeah, it's very, very heavy-handed in the end.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Mm-hmm. And like I said, three separate endings. Like, yeah, I thought that's really what soured me on the film. As I said, I was pretty excited to see it because I felt like this was going to be Spike Lee's rebound film because he's had some stinkers recently.
Oh, yeah, you know? He's had... well, I mean, he hasn't made the, you know, a film... like he did, like Do the Right Thing.
Right.
Something
right.
like
or
that.
Or Malcolm X, you know. Or actually Inside Man. I'm a big fan of that movie. I think that was a fantastic crime flick done by Spike Lee. But yeah, this one, very subpar.
Even some of the stuff that he came out with that wasn't, you know, Do the Right Thing or Malcolm X level, but Crooklyn, I don't know if you've ever seen Crooklyn.
I've seen Crooklyn.
That's probably one of my favorite Spike Lee
yes.
joints. He also did Get on the Bus.
Mm-hmm.
Even those, which I don't think were quite as hailed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he's even gotten back to that level at this point.
Yeah. What's your next movie that you would like to discuss?
I'll pick another one that I think will be up for Best Picture and that I really enjoyed, A Star is Born.
Oh, okay. All right, with Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And again, you know, this has been remade, I don't know how many times. Is it the third remake?
I think this is the third remake. Third time, I believe so.
But what they've done, again, is, you know, they've set it in modern times. They've created different, these are different characters. So it still feels extremely mm-hmm. original. The mm-hmm. music in it is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
The performances are great. And they, these two characters, you really connect with, particularly mm-hmm. Cooper's character. And it's really a pretty, you know, effective emotional roller coaster as you're mm-hmm. seeing, you know, him
deal with his substance abuse issues that he has and whatnot.
Right. And of course, he's, you know, found his muse and also mm-hmm. someone, you know, to put on the map. He's found a talent that's lying out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that just needs to be exposed to blow up as a star.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well.
Cool. I'm going to stick with that idea of music and say that the next film I'd like to talk about, Bohemian Rhapsody.
I enjoyed Bohemian
Rhapsody. I liked it a lot. I thought it was very well done. I mean, Rami Malek deserves all the credit in the world for almost literally becoming Freddie Mercury. I mean, he did such a great job.
He does a good job, yeah. And all the stage scenes are great.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. I really, really liked it. I did tell my one friend, I said, the only gripe I had was, and I don't know why I do this. I can't be mad at the film. I should be mad at myself. You go down the internet rabbit hole, as happens to me, and then you find out some of the intricacies, you know, of the film. Because
some of the artistic liberties they take.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, sure. You know, because I was like, how many films or how many albums did Queen have? And I started down the rabbit hole. And then you start, you know what I mean? So I can't be mad at the film for that. That's my own stupid fault for, you know, doing that. But yeah, overall, fantastic. I really liked it.
Yeah, I think the theatrical performances, the stage performances are what stand out, and his performance. I will say, when I found out that it won Best Picture at the Globes over A Star is Born.
Oh.
I said to my wife, I said, and this is how much I think of A Star is Born. I mean, it's a little knock on Bohemian Rhapsody, but it's hard for me. And I can see how some people, you know, a few people, I guess, could think that Bohemian Rhapsody was a better picture than A Star is Born. But a mass of individuals to actually believe that Bohemian Rhapsody is better than A Star is Born, I found that very surprising.
Because
they're very similar films.
I haven't seen A Star is Born, so I'll take your word on that one. But I gave it an A because I really, really liked it. And so, something else from your list.
Did we talk about Blindspotting the last time?
I believe we did. Yes, I do.
Okay.
That would be one of those.
Here's another Netflix one, and it didn't get much press.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I like how it's a series of segments called the Battle of Buster Scruggs, directed by
the Coen brothers. Yes, okay.
And I don't know if it... I think it maybe showed theatrically in a few places. It never came to Columbus.
No, it did not. And in fact, I didn't even know if it was released in the theater, to be honest with you. It might have been. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd have to. I should have done a little more research.
We would have to Google that one, yes.
But I mean... There's like, I don't know, maybe five or six stories in the Battle of Buster Scruggs. Mm-hmm. It starts out with a bang.
Okay.
It's the first segment's the best. Tim Blake Nelson rolls in. He's in all white. He's a cowboy, slick shooter. Of course, Tim Blake Nelson does not look like your rough guy. Like if you saw Rango, he kind of comes off as the Rango guy coming into town.
Yeah.
But unlike Rango... he can deliver the goods.
Okay.
So he is the quickest draw in the West.
Okay.
And the way that... And it, to be honest, I say Rango because it's a Western.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the... Oh, that's the name of it, is the Battle of Buster Scruggs. It's the mm-hmm. first segment. It's called the Battle of Buster Scruggs.
Okay.
The entire movie is as well. But it's very cartoonish, that particular segment.
Okay.
So it plays really well to that. And it also, there are some themes that are lurking about within that mm-hmm. segment and the other ones that kind of add up and lead to something in the end.
I have heard that the other two segments are not as strong. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's probably, maybe there's as many as four other segments, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, none of them are as strong as the first
as the very first act.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
But you recommend it?
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's really good. Probably BB plus.
Okay, I'll go with some Netflix originals too that I saw. Again, because I'm a complete He-Man and Masters of the Universe nerd. Power of Grayskull, which was a documentary about that set of toys. I liked it. I felt though, you know, with the timing of watching how the Toys That Made Us, which had an episode for He-Man and Masters of the Universe, there was kind of a lot of lap over. However, I did appreciate that Power of Grayskull does talk the last 20 minutes about the absolutely awful Dolph Lundgren film, He-Man and Masters of the Universe. And what I found fascinating was the constant backstage, like, bickering and politics that went on with that film. Like, they really, the director and the producers really wanted to make a much better version of He-Man, but they were handcuffed by the studio in that. Here's a telling point. They had talked about Frank Langella is, of course, Skeletor. He and Dolph had worked out this very elaborate fight scene that they were going to shoot the following day, of which point, when it came time to shoot that, big wigs from the studio go, you don't have time to do that. You're just, this is what you're going to do, A, B, and C. But wait, we've come up with this. It'll be awesome. It'll be a lot. Nah, we ain't got time. Let's go. Let's roll cameras. So it shows kind of like the disconnect between the vision that could have been for that movie and what ended up being, what quite frankly is a very crappy movie. So
is it, the documentary itself, is it, it's centered around
it's He-Man, center,
He-Man and the Mask, everything.
Everything. The toys and the film, yes. Okay. So I gave it an A. I really, really liked it. So, however, I'm going to go to the other end of the spectrum, and this is probably the controversial take of this episode. I watched another documentary on Netflix that was absolutely awful.
Okay.
The documentary I'm referring to is Shirkers. This film I heard about while listening to NPR. I think
that's actually gotten some pretty good
Oh, it's gotten rave reviews, so I don't know what's wrong with me, because everybody loves it, but I can't stand it.
Okay.
So it is the tale of Sandy Tan, a young lady from Singapore who becomes friends with an American who, I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Cordova. And he's basically a con man and cons her into believing that he is a guy that has worked on all these different movies and everything. He's going to help her make her film. So they do one summer. Her and her friends leave to go back to college. They leave Singapore. He stays there. He steals all everything. He steals all the footage and everything and disappears. 20 years later, his widow starts mailing the film back to Sandy. All right. And the film's absolutely pristine. The problem that I have, well, that's a great tale, and that's a fantastic story, is the execution of it within the actual documentary. My problem that I had with it was you have, and I'm so sorry, but Sandy Tan is not a very very good narrator. She's very monotone, and it's very kind of boring. You know, she's not animated. So that's problem number one. But problem number two is they would talk about certain things within the documentary, and then you would get scenes from the actual movie. The problem is, Paul, that those scenes don't have any audio because they lost the audio track. So they just put in weird music. And it's not like, here's 30 seconds, here's a minute and a half. No, they're like 10-minute segments of this in the documentary. That to me, I'm like, this interrupts the entire flow of the film, of the documentary.
So there's no is there any narration over
the 10 times, yes. At times, but not a lot. And It's kind of a train wreck, in my opinion.
Okay.
So, I know, and I think I'm the only one that has that opinion.
Yeah, no, I think it's gotten
rave really reviews, good reviews everywhere, yeah. But I just didn't dig it. So, anywho, so there's my controversial take. People will be probably tweeting at me that I'm an idiot, but whatever. Anyways, what's next on your list?
Next, I can't remember when all these were released. One of my favorite films of the year is called Eighth Grade. Modern Times, about a girl in her final week of eighth grade, and just basically how she's uncomfortable with, I don't know, uncomfortable to a certain extent with who she is. She's
like most middle school kids are.
Yeah, yeah, they're not comfortable in their own shoes.
No.
And she creates these videos online that, of course, people can like and recommend and whatnot. And they're kind of self-help videos for other people. Very funny. And, of course, it just goes about kind of a set over maybe 2-3 days. Like I said, it's kind of the last week of school. And she goes to a birthday party and she has a crush on a boy and, you know, have some things at the last day of school. She goes to kind of an introduction to she goes one day to a high school where she follows around one of the high school students to make her comfortable with what she's to expect next year. And it just deals with, I would imagine, most, if not all, of the situations that kids would have to go through. And it just feels like it hits the nail on the head every time.
And I think that that film got wasn't a huge budget film either. As a matter of fact, that small. Young lady, I don't think that was her first acting experience.
She is terrific.
Yeah,
I think Elsie Fisher.
Yes, that is her name. Yep,
is her name. And again, going back to these videos that she makes, whether it was natural or timed. It's a terrific performance, particularly the scenes where she's doing these videos, because she's very apprehensive and she stutters and she, you know, fumbles across her words.
Okay.
Whether that's her acting or, you know, her just being spur of the moment.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard to imagine someone doing as an effective job in those scenes as she does. And there's, even as a parent, she's since she's raised by her father.
Okay.
And there are some touching moments between, there's some struggling moments between her and her father. And I think on a lot of ways, you know, it felt very, it kind of hit home to me. Because I have a sixth grader that, you know, goes through some of the same emotions and things that she does in eighth grade.
Sure. Do you think that maybe eighth grade's better than, of course, another film that was very similar, Lady Bird?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think they're both terrific
films. They're both terrific,
but maybe but eighth grade to me is
more realistic, more down to earth.
I think to a certain extent it's much less, not that Lady Bird was pretentious, but it was it was much more structured.
Okay.
I think it had more of a involvement, not that there isn't a story to eighth grade, but it more is focused on capturing a collective group of moments.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. You know.
I'm going to go with a superhero movie next. Venom. Did you happen to
see? I did not see Venom.
Okay. Venom.
That was one of those. I was like, oh, I'll wait to see what the tomato meter looks like. And then I saw the tomato meter. I'm like, yeah, we can pass on this.
I gave it a C because I didn't think it was bad, but I didn't think it was great either. I feel Tom Hardy did a very good job with what he was given in terms of the script. I think, look, Venom historically was a villain. And then he became like the cool villain, so that then they kind of spun him off into being a hero in the comic book, okay? But with that being said, in the comic book, he always had a rival that was even a bigger threat than he. And I feel this, much like I said with Ant-Man and the Wasp, there's not a big enough villain to make me feel like there's any ounce of danger. And that was the same case with Venom. I felt like the villain was kind of wishy-washy, not really somebody that would be a viable threat.
Who is the villain?
The villain is, oh gosh, he ends up becoming another Venom, and he has a dumb name, like, I don't remember even what it is. But in that
instance, he was that good of a bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, really not memorable. Yeah.
He was not memorable. Now, he was a scientist that was working with the symbiote, the thing that changes Eddie Brock into Venom. And he decides to weaponize it. But again, even that character of the Doctor was kind of like, ooh, okay, so you're like wishy-washy Elon Musk. Okay. You know? I mean, I think they could have done a little bit better with it. It also suffers from a little bit of the Transformer syndrome, you know, in the fight scenes with the two monsters. Like, is that Venom or is that the other guy? Riot. Riot was the name of the villain.
Okay.
And you're like, is that Riot? No, that might be... you know what I mean? Like, you can't tell who's who.
Yeah, that, you know? The Transformer films are too manic to understand really what's going on. And
yeah. And that was the same here. So, yeah, you get to see. So, I know we should probably talk about it, even though you said you didn't see it. But let's talk about the other big superhero film.
Aquaman, yes. Aquaman. And that was one that I waited too long on the tomato meter. We decided not to do it. Again, it came out during when there's, good Lord, it seems like, you know, maybe 10 movies a week that are coming out. And I know that was a big one.
Yeah.
But it came from the DC Universe. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, and it was Aquaman, to be honest. Aquaman is not a mark.
I gave it an A-, Paul. Yeah. I really liked it.
No, I think in general it's gotten pretty good reviews. Yes. Everyone I know, the people, if you will, have enjoyed it as well.
I mean, the visuals are very well done, you know, and the special effects. I think that the acting is serviceable. I mean, I do. I think that everybody does a very good job of playing those particular roles. Even Jason Momoa, who... Yeah, some people have told me that have seen, they go, well, Aquaman's kind of, he's not a very smart guy. Well, you know, tongue in cheek, let's be honest, Aquaman's not maybe the best superhero in the world. You know, prior to this movie, you know, you think of Aquaman as...
He probably wouldn't even crack the top 20.
Right, right. And so I think that, yeah, sure, make him be kind of, he's not the very smart, but he's the brutish guy, because let's be honest, Momoa is a put-together dude.
Yeah.
I only felt, and this, I said it before a couple of episodes ago, I think my major issue with Aquaman, my problem is Aquaman has to do task one, task two, task three, task four, and then he can become king of Atlantis. Well, when you start getting to task two and three, you could have trimmed some of that down because the movie's like 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, that was another thing that I looked at. I'm like,
yeah.
I mean, does it feel like it's 2 hours and 20 minutes? That's the, to me.
Yes, it does. Okay. It does. And that's why I say when you're doing task two and three, they could have trimmed some of that down. Like instead of, I don't know what the running time was on just those couple of scenes,
right,
but trim them down some so we could get to the point, because I think you could have done that. It still held a pretty cohesive story. So, but I gave it an A-. So.
I will say, based on the trailers, the visuals look terrific.
Oh, they are. They are fantastic. They are fantastic. Yeah, so I recommend it.
It's on the radar. I know I need to see it on the big... It's a movie you're not going to be able to fool the... You're not going to be able to feel the full extent. Easy for right. you to say, difficult for me. Extent of the visuals if you're watching it on your television.
Right,
so
right.
I know I need to make
yeah.
time.
And hey, well, let's just be honest. It kicked the daylights out of Welcome to Marwen that opened that same weekend, which I was disheartened by because I have yet to see the movie. I wanted to see the movie. I've been very excited about it because I'm a huge fan of the source material, the documentary.
Yes. Yeah,
Marwen,
the documentary is terrific.
Yeah, but I still haven't made it there. And you know, unfortunately, when it only makes about close to $3 million in its opening weekend, that's not a good sign.
and that's a film that has to have some critical backing behind
yeah.
it, probably.
Yeah.
And it got none. Zero behind it,
yeah.
which is a real disappointment because Robert Zemeckis is the one that
yeah.
did it. And
does $3 million even cover Steve Carell's paycheck? That's what I want to know.
Was that the?
I don't know. I don't know what his what.
No,
his
I mean, was that
was.
What the?
Yeah.
I didn't catch
opening,
the box office.
Opening weekend, it only made $2.35 million.
I didn't realize it had flopped that bad.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, you're up against Mary Poppins and Aquaman,
right?
You know, I mean, you're gonna get your clock cleaned. So,
yeah,
it's sad, but I hope to see it. I just haven't had a chance to go see it. So, well, what's next on the list?
I can't remember if this came out before our last podcast, but talking about big films,
mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible Fallout.
I think we did discuss that a little bit, but
okay.
you liked it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, of all the, you know, the big mm-hmm. Hollywood productions, I, unlike you, I did enjoy Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I know, okay.
that and Mission Impossible Fallout and Black Panther, I think, are ones that were a step ahead. Step above all the other big studios.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I put Black Panther in my top five for this year.
Oh,
I
yeah,
really did because
up there for me too.
Yeah, because it was a great tale. The movie was very well done. It made me care about a character I could care less about. You know, 3 years ago, I'm like, I don't care. Black Panther, woo, yay, I don't care. You know, but it made me actually care. And for me, that's why I put it right up there.
Another big studio release, and it didn't reach the box office that those others did, but it was really good, is Widows. That'll easily be in my top 10.
Was Widows the, I guess you could call it Thelma and Louise-esque type of film?
It's definitely not. I wouldn't say Thelma and Louise-esque because, although I haven't, and maybe I'm losing my critical credentials, I've never seen Thelma and Louise.
Okay.
But that's a more or less a comedy, right?
Well, I think, yeah.
I know there are dramatic moments in
Thelma
and Louise.
Yeah, but this is the Viola Davis movie, you know, where it's about some women
yes.
that have some husbands or boyfriends or whatnot that go to jail.
Yes. Okay. It's written directed by Steve McQueen, who filmed... Not the Steve McQueen.
Not the Steve McQueen.
Well, actually, he is. I'll tell you what. He may get as big with directing 12 Years a Slave and now Widows.
Have you seen his first film, though? It's pretty bad. His first film is not very good.
I'm gonna have to check here.
Shame. It's not very good. But anywho, go ahead.
I have. Is that the
Michael Fassbender?
I did.
Yes, and that was not a very good film. Sorry. Anyways,
I actually gave it a B minus on Now Playing, but but back to Widows. Yes, it's centered around the widows of a group of heisters that have all been knocked off the last job that they did.
Oh, okay, so they were killed. They weren't incarcerated.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hence the title Widows. They're all dead.
I thought for some odd reason there was some type of prison thing. Or go ahead, carry on.
They all die.
Okay.
And there's this money that their husbands acquired from the person they were working for that he wants his money back.
Oh, okay.
So the widows have to figure out how to get the money back. No. And of course, the only thing they can come up with is to do the same thing that their husbands did during the money. Oh. So they're going to do a heist.
Okay.
And they're going to get the money to pay back
the other criminal.
The criminal that their husbands owed. Yes. There's also one of the guy that they owe the money to is actually running for office in a Chicago suburb district.
Okay.
And he's running against a branded by the family name politician played by Colin Farrell. His father, Robert Duvall, has served as a politician in that area. And, you know, he's the next, kind of like the Bushes the Clintons that, you know, established themselves and they're next in line, whatever. So there's some inner workings between those two politicians and what's going on with the widows that makes it very compelling.
Okay.
And all of their stories kind of intermix together.
Okay.
And it makes for a extremely dramatic and thrilling and very forceful film.
Okay. Would you give it an A or?
I'd give it an A minus.
An A minus?
Yeah. Okay. I have a hard time giving A's, but.
All right. Well, I'm going to go on that idea of a crime movie. I saw The Mule, Clint Eastwood's last film. And
I wanted to see that. That was my.
I give it a B, Paul, because it should be just a straight point A to point B tale. And they do that. But there's a couple of scenes that I'm going, why are we even doing this? And I will not ruin it, but I will just say the two scenes deal with Earl, who is played by Clint Eastwood, and some really weird sexual stuff. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. No sense whatsoever. And it happens twice. And to me, I'm like, why is this? It just seems out of place. It just seems to be there just because, hey, let's do it. No. Like, he's a 90-year-old man. He barely can shuffle around, you know? and he's the drug mule, and I don't get why there's this... Like, that really bothered me about the film. And from other folks that I know that have seen it, agree with me that it would seem very odd and very out of place.
Maybe he's tapping into his inner Woody Allen.
Maybe. So I gave it.
Of course, Alan that does that, you know, for the longest time would have himself paired with
incredibly beautiful
young woman.
Talking about another old man, I was very disappointed with Old Man and the Gun.
That's another one I did not see. My co-host is telling me I need to see it. The film that's being billed right now is Robert Redford's last film.
Right, and he was fantastic in it. What they did with Casey Affleck was terrible. I gave it a C because his character and his whole storyline is ridiculous. It's just absolutely silly. Like, the problems I have with it is they constantly, or the character of Casey Affleck constantly talks about how he never wants to be a cop anymore and he wants to retire and all this jazz while trying to catch Robert Redford. The problem that I have is, why? Why do you not want to be a cop? Why do you not want to be this detective anymore? But you continue to harp on it, but there's no explanation behind it. Not even a simple one. Not even a, well, you know, my partner was killed. You know, something to make me go, okay, that makes your actions seem plausible. It just kind of seemed, he seems like a whiny little kid. And it kind of took away from the movie. But Sissy Spacek, very good in it. And Robert Redford was pretty good in it, too. So
that's one I've wanted to see. Yeah. But, you're making me want to see it a little less.
I'm sorry.
no, that's what a good critic does.
what else you got that we haven't talked about yet?
I don't know if she'll be up for performance, but Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Oh, the one with Melissa McCarthy.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And she's really good in it. The story is really interesting. Mm-hmm. It is based on a real life story.
Sure, sure.
Sometimes these things feel a little less real life.
Right, right.
In this instance, it felt completely authentic. She is terrific as Lee Israel, mm-hmm. who is this kind of prime writer.
Yeah, kind of a con artist a little bit too.
Oh, she's all con artist. I mean, she's all con artist in it. Because she's essentially, what she's done, she was a successful writer. Mm-hmm. Well, she came out with one book that was very successful.
Okay.
The first scene, I think, is her at I can't remember what paper she was writing for.
Okay.
But she's essentially ticked off everybody there. Mm-hmm. She drinks and smokes on the job in the office. And she basically just tells, when she tells somebody, you know, she tells them to F off, and they finally tell her to hit the bricks.
Okay.
So she has no means because she's lost her job as a writer for a newspaper.
Right.
She's no longer a successful novelist. And she kind of stumbles across this way to make money. She had a letter for someone that she writes about other people.
Mm-hmm.
So those are what her books are focused on. And she had an old letter or something that was written to her by someone that was famous. And she goes to a bookstore and finds out that there's apparently a decent market for old letters written by writers or celebrities or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So she sells that for, I don't know if it's a couple hundred dollars or whatever. And she only has a letter or two from people. So she decides that she's going to start
fabricating
the letters. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, she is a bona fide con artist that she takes these letters to these dealers and is passing them off as the real deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she's befriended by this guy named Jack Hawk, played by Richard Grant, who mm-hmm. stumbles across her at a bar one night.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this kind of unusual friendship. They work terrific together.
Oh.
And I would expect if she doesn't get an Oscar nomination that he's going to. Because
mm-hmm.
he was definitely
a very good supporting
actor. Yeah, he was definitely one of the top five performances in a supporting role last year.
Cool. I'm going to go... let's see, I have a couple more left to go here. You know what? I'm going to talk about Halloween.
Okay.
Did you see the remake?
I did. I thought it was all right.
I really liked it.
I would have been C.
I gave it a B, because it's got the hokiness that all those horror movies have. I really liked it because I felt that the story was something that we didn't see before. Like, the whole story with Laurie, Jamie Lee Curtis's character. Like, what's the ramifications, what's the consequences of surviving that? Like, I thought that that was good. Yes, that's an interesting point. You know, and I like that they eliminated all the other sequels that, hey, Halloween, the first one started, 40 years later, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really well done. Yes, I think that it was hokey in the way in which, you know, they set it up for a sequel, which is probably not going to be any good. I mean, very few sequels are good, especially with horror films. But I liked it. I thought it was very well done. And I'm not a big horror buff either, like big horror movie.
Well, and I guess that's why I found it to be less than recommendable, I guess.
Really?
I'd probably give it a C+.
Okay. All right.
Did you really feel it was a horror film? Were you really frightened by many scenes?
Actually, to be honest with you, I saw it more as a revenge film, personally. Like, this is Jamie Lee Curtis is going to get her revenge, man. She has been waiting and waiting. You know, on top of all the neurosis and psychosis that has happened to her, I think it's more of a revenge film than a horror film. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent, and maybe I'm basing my grade on my expectations, but when you go to see a film called Halloween, and it's got Michael Myers and Jamie Lee Curtis in it, I expect a few more...
Scares,
yeah. Okay. And I can only think of maybe... And they're relatively quick.
Yeah.
The scenes that I think are extremely effective. There's the first one where... he breaks out on the bus.
Yeah.
And then there's also a scene late, and I think this is terrific. I think it's probably as well done as any horror scene on the year, is when he's following this boy home through the backyard of someone else's house, and they have those security lights. They on and off and on and off. And
yes.
That was extremely well executed.
Yes.
But in general, I think it plays as kind of a decent, okay thriller.
Okay.
I think you point out probably the best part about it is kind of this examination of, what's happened to Laurie's character throughout the years and how it's really horribly affected herself, her daughter, and then, of course,
has an effect
on her granddaughter. Yeah,
right, yeah.
And I think that, seeing that through the generations works well, too. But as a horror film, it doesn't cut it.
Sure, sure. Anything else?
Let's see. There has to be more out. Some of these other ones are earlier.
We already talked about A Quiet
Place and Heredity.
I think so. Did you like Heredity?
I did.
Okay.
I thought it was...
Because I actually don't think that we talked about Heredity last time, because that was in October.
Yeah.
You
want to talk about good horror films. Yeah. That would lead perfectly. I think that's probably... I'm trying to think of the last horror film that I've enjoyed as much as Hereditary.
I did not... Well, I saw the ending because I went to a party where it was being shown, a Halloween party, and I arrived at the house, and I'm like, what is this? And they're like, it's Heredity. And I'm like... Oh, so I caught literally the last half hour, and I'm like,
okay,
but I got to be honest, I was completely out of the element of it because, A, I was like, well, I don't know the first part of this, so I'm just going to talk to people and hang out and have a good time because, I've missed most of it, so.
Right.
But you recommend it?
Yeah, highly. Okay. For those that are really enamored in the horror genre, this is a complete... it puts you through the ringer.
Okay.
There are some things that you're like, oh, they're not going to go. Oh, wow. They just went there. that I didn't think we would see, and we saw.
Okay.
But it's for shock value, for just kind of the moment to moment angst that, Toni Collette, she's not going to be nominated for an Oscar, but it's definitely one of the best performances of the year, is this mother that is essentially watching her family crumble in front of her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with a family setting of a movie. I saw Puzzle, which is a remake, I believe, of a Bollywood film with Kelly MacDonald and Ephraim Khan.
Okay.
It was a small independent film. Kelly MacDonald plays kind of a housewife who is underappreciated by her husband and her family. And she is very good at puzzles. Like, she can put puzzles together like that, and she ends up finding Ephraim Khan's character, who is a very wealthy man who loves to participate in puzzle competitions. So they become partners. And then basically you see how their friendship becomes a little bit more, and how that impacts her family because her husband kind of, doesn't feel like she should be doing this. I liked it. I give it an A-. I thought it was delightful. I thought it was very well done, very well executed in terms of, the family dynamic of all the two kids and the husband and Kelly MacDonald's character.
Did that show in theaters?
It did. I saw it at the Drexel, actually. Okay. Yeah. So, highly recommend it.
Puzzles.
Puzzle.
All right. That's Puzzle.
It. Puzzle. Okay. My other one, and this is the last one I have on my list, which I believe this came out in March, but I watched it in August, Chappaquiddick.
I did not see it.
With starring Jason Clarke and Ed Helms. I liked it a lot. I felt like, again, I was very captivated by not so much the event itself, but the way in which the Kennedy family and those that were affiliated with the Kennedy families tried to manipulate the situations. I found that tale to be very, very interesting and intriguing. And to an extent, how awfully terrible Teddy Kennedy was at following some of the rules that their cleanup crew, so to speak, as I used air quotes, or trying to do damage control for this, and how he was just a complete moron and would do things or like, why are you doing it? Don't right. call Life Magazine. What's wrong with you? No one wants to hear your side, And so I found it very interesting. I gave it an A. I liked it.
That's another one I would have liked to have seen. From what I understand, it's very apolitical.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah, yeah.
Sticks to the facts of the story and kind of more about the situation and, doesn't really get involved into the
Right. Yeah. Would you like to talk about movies that are coming out?
We're
getting close to our time limit here, so maybe we can talk about those that are coming out. I think everybody is probably, especially if you're a comic book nerd, Avengers Endgame. I mean, I think everybody's highly anticipating that feature, which you know, probably will pick up where the last Avengers film took place. Yeah, and, you know,
I was gonna say, I don't know how it could.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not as big into the Marvel universe as some, and
I know. Yeah.
And I get kind of tired of the same. although the last Avengers films felt different.
Yeah,
and right. I thought it was a grade above the other two. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to Endgame.
Endgame. What about Captain Marvel, which I think comes out in February? No, it comes out in March. Sorry, March 8th, I believe it comes out.
I'll be honest. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm kind of tired of the Marvel, but this looks like, you know, again, it's a female lead.
Right, exactly.
It's got Brie Larson.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm on board for it. Yeah.
I think it could be this year's Black Panther, so to speak. I think it's going to wow a bunch of people. Because here again, I'm a comic book nerd, and I'm like, I don't care about Captain Marvel. I mean, I really don't. So I'm curious to see if this makes me care about that character like you know, Black Panther did.
The fact that they have Brie Larson as Captain Marvel makes me more interested in seeing the film.
Okay.
Because, now granted, the projects that she picked, the independent films that she's done, mm-hmm. I liked Room. I mm-hmm. really liked Short Term 8. I don't know mm-hmm. if you've seen that.
I have not seen either one of those.
Yeah, I think Short Term 8 is the one that probably should have got the press that Room got.
Okay.
It's where she plays a counselor of kind of troubled teens.
Mm-hmm.
She's terrific in it. And that's what makes me think that she got her role in Room for, mm-hmm. and then, of course, that has led her to get this role.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the fact that she's picked it or that she's been willing to do it, I think, probably means something about the film itself,
because mm-hmm.
she normally does good work in the film she's in.
What else do you have on your list of upcoming?
I just went through a quick list of 2019. The reviews haven't been good for it, but Glass, I'm looking forward to.
You know, I am too, but I have not seen Split. Because, as I tell everybody, I gave up on M. Night Shyamalan a while ago.
That's unfortunate. Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, a lot of people did because of the films he was doing.
Right. But I hear Split is fantastic. And yeah, it's really good.
Split's really good. That was on my honorable mention list last year. And I, for the life of me, cannot think of the one that he came out with just before Split, which I thought was very good as well. It's a short film. It was kind of back to his roots. I think the fact that he's kind of getting away from the big twist ending mm-hmm. helps.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to be honest, I'm going to say probably after...
The Visit is what he did.
The Visit. Okay. Yes. I don't know if I remember that
so
one.
So you probably, I'm guessing, most people got off M. Night Shyamalan. They started, I don't know if they jumped off, but they started taking one foot off his films is The Village. But I like The Village.
Prior to that, I Signs.
Really? Yeah. Signs?
Signs I liked, but then I heard all of the bad press about all of his other films after that, which I think Lady in the Water, was that next? Or
Lady in the Water was bad.
Okay.
And then he's...
Then The Village, does that come next? Or
no, the Village was after Signs.
Signs, okay.
Like, I liked Signs.
I did too. I thought it was okay. I liked it, yeah.
The ending was a little bit much.
Yeah, I agree.
But I
need to watch Split and probably need to rewatch Unbreakable, because that's one that I've not seen a lot, and yes. I kind of forgot because
it's Unbreakable is really good too. Yeah,
yeah, it's like 24 years old or whatever. God knows how long it's
18
been. 18 years.
18
okay.
years, but yeah, Unbreakable doesn't even seem that 18 years old. But yeah, there's that. Signs, The Village. I think a lot of people jumped off with The Village. I enjoyed The Village.
Okay.
I even enjoyed the twist ending in The Village.
Okay.
But then Lady in the Water, I mean, to me, that was falling off a cliff.
Okay. Gotcha.
But the rebound to me, and this is from the guy that even gave After Earth a pass.
Okay.
The Will Smith.
Oh, yeah.
with his son film. I even gave that a B-. But The Visit, to me, is pretty simple. It's basic. It has thrills.
Okay. And that was released in theaters?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. All right. It's short, too. I think it's around, the hour and a half mark.
Okay.
It's about these two kids that go to stay with their grandparents for the weekend. And their grandparents start going a little kooky.
That's M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
I remember that because they had the commercial with the oven where the kid opens the oven because they were making... I didn't know that was M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, there's cookies in there. Oh, can I take a look at it?
Yeah. yeah, I remember that.
There's some moments like that I think are very effective. And I don't want to tell you too much more about
the. I gotcha. Yeah, okay, I didn't know that was him. Works
well. If you want to see again, if you want to see kind of a creepy horror film that's not based on guts and gore, just mm-hmm. good, you know,
suspense and
yeah,
that.
Suspense okay. and fear. The Visit. Yeah,
I see. You have the Lego Movie 2 down.
Yeah, I enjoy the Lego Movie. I so do I'm too. Looking forward to Lego Movie 2.
I am. I'm looking forward to it. I was adamant though. I did not like the Lego Batman movie. Now, really? I did not like it.
Oh, I even enjoyed Lego Ninjago.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Very few people I know have said that.
I'm all in on the Lego movies. Okay. I mean, they kind of keep this real kind of quirky and silly sense of humor.
This one I have faith for because Lord Miller's back doing it. You know, the production crew of those guys, where they weren't the guys behind Batman, the Batman Lego movie. So I have some fingers crossed that they'll have a really good showing with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've gotten progressively lesser mm-hmm. and effective from the original Lego movie to Lego Batman to Lego Ninjago. But they still kind of have this real silly, goofy sense of humor that mm-hmm. I think the spirit of all the Lego movies are one and the same.
Sure. You have Toy Story 4 now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know you're a big fan.
Yeah, I love all the Toy Story.
When does that come out? Is that a summer release?
I would think that would be a May, yeah. Okay. That would be a big maybe Memorial Day or a week or two before Memorial Day. I don't know when. Avengers is April, I believe.
Yes, it is April. So, it's mid-April, I want to say.
Yeah, so that'll wait until the Avengers dies down before mm-hmm. you bring out Toy Story. But
one that I'm looking forward to, going back to DC books, I'm looking forward to Shazam. Okay. I think that looks fun. I think that's going to be a lighthearted superhero flick. I'm looking forward to it. I think it, from the previews I've seen, seems like it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
I know nothing about Shazam.
Okay. All right. Well.
Tell me about it.
Well, you know what? Since we're running close on time, maybe I'll tell you off
air. All right.
All right. So that we can fit in a couple others, because I know that Frozen 2 is another one that is coming out this year. Is that on your list?
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed the first. I was impressed with how much I enjoyed the first Frozen. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Frozen 2.
Okay.
It's funny. I knock on sequels, and now these are all the ones I'm excited about.
I know. Then what about The Lion King? The new Lion King?
I don't really understand why.
As your family's cat enters the room.
Yeah, right on cue, Marley. Right on cue.
Way to go.
So Marley wants to see, obviously, The Lion King. It's part of her breed. I don't know if it's as good as and effective as The Jungle Book or, you know, as The Jungle Book, then right. I'm all on board.
Well, and then they have Dumbo, too, right? Which is live action, so to speak.
Dumbo live action, and apparently it's the big year for that, because I think Aladdin... They're doing as well. Oh, yeah. All three of those are coming out. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So it should be an interesting first half of 2019 when it comes to film.
Yeah. And sequels, apparently. Yeah. One that is not a sequel, but is an independent film that I like to get in real quick is Under the Silver Lake, which is kind of a mystery thriller with Andrew Garfield. It's directed by David Robert Mitchell, who did It Follows.
It
looks really intriguing.
Okay. Yeah. And you know what? Another one, which I just looked at your list and I saw the previews for it at Bohemian Rhapsody, and I'm like, I have no, like, I could care less about that subject, but I'll go see that Rocket Man. Like, I could care less about Elton John, but that preview, I was like, you know what? That looks like that will be interesting.
Yeah, and the guy that picked up, the director that picked up where Bryan Singer left off, mm-hmm. Bryan Singer was credited as the director mm-hmm. of Bohemian Rhapsody, but apparently Dexter Fletcher mm-hmm. was heavily involved and took over the reins when Singer left the project. He's the one that's directing Rocket Man.
Oh, so cool, good. Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah, I assume the musical moments in Rocket Man will be right up there with those in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, well, Paul, since we're almost up to an hour here, we're just a shade over it, let's wrap things up. Is there any plugs you want to give?
Filmboundpod.com if you're looking, you know, if you like what you heard
there you go.
Between John and I.
Yeah.
Check out Mark and I on Filmboundpod.com. Okay.
Filmboundpod still has the Twitter account too, right? At Filmbound.
Yes.
Filmboundpod.
Yes, at Filmboundpod. Yes.
There you go.
Thank you.
There you go. So check them out if you get the chance. And with that, Paul, thanks, man, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot again for having me. I look forward to another one.
Oh, you know it. In the summertime, we'll get together and talk. So. Great. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mr. Paul Markoff.
talking about the movies that we saw over the second half of 2018. And if you love movies like I do, go listen to Paul and his partner Mark over at the Film Bound podcast. Once again, that's filmboundpod.com. That's probably the easiest and best way to get your hands on that podcast. They have a weekly episode every week. And, you know, it's a great, great podcast. So show some love to those guys over there, if you will. I've already told you where you can get in touch with me at the beginning of this podcast when I was talking about how some people might want to rant and rave over the use or overuse, excuse me, of the adjective fantastic in this episode. And again, I don't know what to say on that. It is what it is. But let me tell you that you can tell some folks about this podcast and say, hey, you need to listen to it, and here's where you can find it. You can find it, obviously, at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, as well as it's distributed through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, Libsyn, the Echo Network, just basically wherever you find podcasts. All you got to do is search for the PVD Cast. Sometimes you have to search for PVD Cast and put my name after it, John Orlando, and then you'll find it. I don't know why. I don't know why search engines are that particular. Maybe the internet hates me. I don't know. But nonetheless, tell somebody, tell two friends, three friends, 72 friends about this podcast, and I will appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to wrap things up. So I will chat at each and every one of you later. And until then, stay righteous and stay independent.